The parallel economy has empowered us to care for our health, well-being, as well as longevity. Likewise, for us pet parents who now have a place to go when it comes to keeping the family dogs, cats, even horses in the best shape possible. As a dog dad, I'm thrilled to be working with Pet Club 24/7, a company founded by two guys who lost dogs to serious conditions, including cancer. Pet Club 24/7 has an incredible array of products, including a line of supplements for humans, such as the Inforce Plus Corollius Versicolor and Inforce Corollius Versicolor with Reishi. My friend and colleague, Christina Ferrari, a cancer survivor herself, swears by it.
When I was diagnosed, the doctor in the emergency room told me, "You have 2 years to live."
Oh boy.
Along with the stem cell, I took these. I have been in remission for 8 years now.
For dogs, mush puppy treats are a fan favorite. Rex, you want to? Oh boy. He came right. Oh, there he is. They are also made with the Coriolis versicolor mushroom, which supports their immune system, according to hundreds of clinical studies. Here's Kristen Ludlow, National Vice President.
That strain does matter. We do have the most potent strain, and we also extract it in a proprietary way. And that's why we've been having such wonderful experiences with these products.
Mush puppies are made here in the U.S. There are no fillers. It's non-addicting. Your dog can't accidentally overdose. Go to drdrew.com/petclub247 for a discount off the list price. That is drdrew.com. PETCLUB 247, Pet Club 247. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Here I am, Bob Forrest, with Dr. Drew.
Another episode of This Life, and it's a distinct privilege to welcome our friend,
our soldier,
Shelly Sprague.
Here you are. Hi. So good to be here. So happy to be here. Happy to see you guys.
I know. It's so nice to see you. We never get to see you anymore, even though you're just right up here on the hill. Are you living over this way now, right?
I'm living in Cypress Park.
Where that is.
We built a house.
Well, I remember you built that house. You're working out
that
forever.
It's a fancy way of saying Mount Washington.
Oh, Mount Washington. Okay. It was a pain in your ass for the longest time. Did it work out?
Oh, hello. Hello.
And your dad was doing the contracting,
oh,
right?
Oh, hello.
City of Los Angeles Building Commission?
Hello. Oh. I mean, really, people.
And it's all good, though, right?
Problems. Oh, yeah, it's great. It's great. I only went about around the bend a couple of times.
Uh-oh.
We almost filed bankruptcy, I don't know, maybe it was 2 or 3 times.
Oh, no.
But no, everything's great.
Because the
everything
house?
Everything is so great. Yes. Well, we bit off a little tiny bit more than we could chew.
And we say we.
My dad and I.
Oh, yeah. Together you did this.
Yeah, we did this
joint
together.
Joint venture.
It was a joint venture.
Working with family always is pleasant.
It got a little bit dodgy because my dad refused to go deal with the city anymore because he has a little personality, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, "I refuse to go down there. You have to do it. I'm like, "I don't know anything about construction." So they were running me all around there. "Go to window 3. No, you need to go down to floor 2. No, you need to go back to 6.
It's so
weird. Oh, no, you forgot
silly.
This. I was
what
like,
"What is that accomplish?
Build a fucking house."
I've decided,
it
guys.
It keeps you from building a house.
Yeah,
it does.
I have decided there is an enemy in society, and it's called
bureaucracy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hello. Can I get a witness? That is just that bureaucratic nightmare. I mean, it will literally, I don't know.
It was
I don't
5 years,
know.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 5 years. It was 5 years, but now it's...
5 years to build a house?
My dad said, yeah, it's...
That's insane when you think about what goes into building a house.
It's insane.
It takes like 3 months to build a house, really.
It's crazy.
A lot of it is getting stuff approved and blah,
everything
blah, blah.
Was getting it approved.
Yeah, and then it seems like the
We had to strong arm the plans guy. We had to come in there and just strong arm.
And there's so many things that take time.
Make him
yeah,
it.
You have to get this thing in order before you can get that thing.
But then, you have to finish this. They can come back and review
it. Was
it
was like 5 years
it.
At the DMV.
Ugh.
So
now you're up still at PRC. What's your job up
yes.
there?
Yes.
Pasadena Recovery Center.
I am.
Well, she's been up there the whole time.
I know.
6 years.
Wow.
Six.
And is Mackenzie up there still?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Is she talking about more publicly about the evolution of her disease or anything? Is she sharing more about that?
That I don't know because yeah. I'm really, really on the front lines. I don't have time to talk about anything.
They got a 15-person caseload over there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a factory worker. Oh, let's face it.
Jesus.
You know, there I do social work. I do dual diagnosis. I do chemical dependency. I do families. I wash the dishes if I have to. I'm literally everything.
This is the modern mechanisms of Obamacare.
Oh, I know. Goodness. Believe me, I know that.
I am literally, I feel like I'm a riveter.
Do you
just
do
with
you,
people in their lives?
Are more people gaining access to treatment?
Yeah, for sure they are.
Yeah, definitely. But again, you know, it's about the motivation of the person.
Yeah,
I can treat people all day long.
This is your dopamine theory again.
I'm telling you. Look at my necklace. McKinsey gave this to me. What is this, Drew?
That's a
what
dopamine molecule.
That's right.
Oh my God. You're
dopamine
kidding
molecule.
Me.
I am not joking. Oh my God. I am not joking. I have decided that everything comes down to this molecule.
There's something a little off about it, though.
Is
I can't
there?
Quite figure
that's
out what
it
is.
Yeah.
Oh,
but that's
great.
What 6 years of working with drug addicts, 15 a day, will do to you.
My life has become one neurotransmitter.
That's so funny.
It's all boiled down to
that.
But
it's all about motivation, right?
Completely.
I mean,
everything.
So how do you change? Eisenhower quoted, excuse me, Eisenhower, Einstein mm-hmm. quoted Schopenhauer once with a mm-hmm. quote that I love. And I don't know if Schopenhauer even said it, but he attributed it to Schopenhauer.
Schopenhauer, the great mm-hmm. philosopher.
Yes, he said, a man can do whatever he wants. He just can't will what he wants.
True.
So your wants and desires, true. Your motivations, you can't will your motivations.
You can't.
So how do you change motivation?
To scare them first.
Okay, so
use the scare tactics.
You're going to die.
You're going to die. Or you're going to, yeah,
that
you're
going to
die.
That doesn't work. Then what?
No. Sometimes that
Incarceration's
works.
Incarceration's more sometimes scary than dying.
Okay, so for antisocial.
And then somebody really doesn't want to be told what to do.
Right.
He'd rather die than be told what to do.
Oh, for sure I would. For sure. Exactly. Is there a question in that?
No, I better change something.
Well. I can ease them into it. I can charm them into it. I can do a tap dance. I can stand on my head. But at the bottom, at the end of the day,
you get the money
it goes
cut
up,
off.
It
you
goes,
get the money cut off.
Yeah, but they'll just find some other way. These
often.
Kids aren't afraid to.
When you say kids, what's the average age
dirty.
Now?
You know, I'm looking at people who basically at that facility is like 18 to 25.
Isn't that
crazy,
that's
mostly what
Drew?
You're doing now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's not a typically motivated population.
That's the whole Hello. Population of drug treatment in America.
Yep. 18 to 25?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, and is it mostly they get going on pills or what?
Yep. The exact thing that I'm going to tell
they
you.
Start on pills and then they're doing
crazy.
Heroin probably only for not even a year
even
by
a
the
year,
time they go to treatment.
But they're shooting it. Lightweight. And they don't know what they're doing. And they don't know what they're doing and they're dying.
Of what?
Overdoses because they don't know what they're doing. Bob, remember
I'm
when we
you.
Remember when we got clean? Remember
yeah.
like remember nobody would even show us how to do it.
Right.
Nobody would even show us. We had to like beg to find
out
how to
drugs. Shoot up.
We wouldn't people were like, "No, we're not giving you heroin."
I had to find girls that knew how to do it already.
Right. We had to find people. You couldn't just go to the internet and find out how to do all of these things.
Right.
You know, you had to get down into
you had to
the
meet
muscle.
People.
So it sounds like
why
what
are
you're
you scrunching
saying?
Up your face?
No, because
that's the truth.
No,
that's the same thing I was saying.
You're misreading me today a whole
okay,
bunch.
Okay.
I was scrunching my face because it sounds like that would be harder than it would be then today. So why
to
are
get
they getting
high?
They,
absolutely
no that they should know more about why oh. are they less why are they more clueless?
Well, they're more clueless because they don't have a hierarchy in their little
there's
junkie
no
world.
There's no mentors of junkies.
There's no
so
people.
They're so they don't know what to trust. They just go to the internet and do whatever.
We exactly. haven't talked about this, and this is exactly what I was talking about. When I was OD, my eyes were rolling back in my head at the Club Lingerie in 1983. Top Jimmy walked up to me.
He's
and
old school.
Slapped me as hard as you can slap a person in the face and goes, "What the fuck are you doing, Bob?"
Yeah.
That's an
you got
old
in trouble.
Junkie saying,
you, got in trouble.
"You don't fucking do that." There's nobody doing that to these kids. There was a junkie code, Drew.
There was.
I'm telling you.
There really was. I couldn't even get dope for years because I was too young and they didn't want
to
give it to
they
me
wouldn't
because
sell
they
it
knew because they knew what was going to happen to me if I
so
did.
So who are the suppliers now that are so liberal with it?
Big pharma.
No. I know that's where it gets going. But
and
once they get to heroin.
Well, once they've experienced it, they're going to do it.
Yeah, they're done.
We're talking about exposure. How did somebody who comes from a middle class background from Orange County and Downey end up junkies in Hollywood? you had to seek that out and you had to be kind of allowed in and taught. And nobody's teaching. There's this get on Vicodin because you hurt your leg playing football. And the next thing you know, you're smoking heroin. And the next thing you know, you're shooting heroin because you know how to go on the internet and find out how to do it. There's no,
there's no structure.
I'm telling you, there's no drug addict structure anymore. Make sense of what we're telling you, Drew.
I'm trying to. I know it makes junkie sense.
There was respect.
We had no access to pills, number one. Okay, right. So that was off the table.
Right.
Could you get a triplicate script,
No,
Bob?
I could get Black Beauty. So yeah. That's
would you even have thought about it?
No. That's the first time we had, I'll say his name, Pat W. at Los Encinas was one of the first prescription drug addicts I knew. Old guy that I knew from junkiedom, right? Uh-huh. He's on pills. I'm like, what the fuck? Why would you even go to rehab if you're on pills?
Yeah.
That was my reaction in 2004.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We don't
because
even, it
just
doesn't
like
even
it's
make
not,
sense.
It's, and to it know that it's too. More deadly, more destructive, and that it's brought to you by Walgreens, CVS, and Merck. It's insane what this country has become.
But people, there's a weird thing that people believe that doctors are getting paid to prescribe opiates or something weird.
Of course.
They don't.
That's what they're saying. No, they don't, but they get paid by the patient when they run out.
Suboxone visits.
Hold on a second. What do you mean paid by the patients?
Well, because $500 the patients.
Well, they get a visit. They get a visit.
They charge $500 cash, Drew.
Some of them just charge their Medicare rate. And
yes,
that's it.
Some do.
So the question is, how do you create a busy practice if you're untalented and not good? I can treat pain. Treat pain. Well, I don't mean everybody treats pain as untalented, not good, but I mean that's what people do. They
get
but
the most
population.
Of them aren't pain management doctors.
I'm seeing.
Listen. They go to GPs up in Sierra Madre, and they just dole out the pills.
Right.
And they have
the ones going to prison now.
Yeah, thank goodness, because this is just absolutely an outrage.
Right. Believe me, she did not make anything from drug companies.
No, I don't
not
think.
One thing.
No, she was making money in her private practice gate.
Yeah, she was just seeing quarterly, hourly wages and was charging per visit, and that's that. Now, the Suboxone story is more pernicious, if you ask me. Because they got in with the National Center on Drug Abuse, and they got them to sign on board, and they funded the research. That's how shit happens.
Now
they've got every doctor on earth signed on.
No, but there are certain doctors. There's a doctor I know that has three clinics, 500, 600, 700 patients per clinic per month, $500 a head.
For what?
That's a lot. The visit to get your Suboxone redone.
That's ridiculous.
That's
going on all over the city, Drew.
It's insane.
That's a lot of money.
Plenty of people are doing it just for their copay, believe me.
And what's that, $45?
$3, $10, you know, it depends.
They definitely.
No.
But here's
I get $36 a visit.
Oh, my God.
A
I
visit.
Know. It's so bad.
And I have to document. I have to show how I documented that I spent 15 minutes there, and I'll have to do 10 minutes of paperwork.
Yes.
To get the 15-minute payment.
Yes. So maybe there's good doctors that are going, fuck that. I'll just see patients for private pay through an urgent care or whatever.
No, through their own. Their own place.
Their practice.
Yeah. A lot of my clients get their pills from urgent cares. I don't know how. I've never asked that deeply.
They just know the right thing to say. Mm-hmm. Urgent care has got to move people. Yeah, it's got to move people through. And your pain is so bad.
And
you
they have
care.
And they have a mentality too at urgent cares where they need to treat people automatically, very quickly, and move them
through.
It's
an emergency, and they get paid top dollar for it, and they need patient satisfaction surveys.
Yes,
and you know
it is very important to treat.
You know that you can go in Santa Ana. Not Santa Ana, Van Nuys on Van Nuys Boulevard, Drew, and go to 7 pain urgent cares going up the boulevard from the courthouse.
We're tickling our own sort of misery with this,
but
we're boring everybody with this.
Let me tell you what I've decided that Suboxone is good for.
Yeah.
Okay, I've figured this out.
Because it is good for something.
It is good for something. Okay, so I've figured it out. People who have chronic pain and cannot do anything about it due to whatever conditions they have, I think that's a good medicine.
I totally agree.
I think that's a very good medicine. And I also think that it is good for people who are pre-contemplative for recovery and contemplative for recovery, but they need to be told that.
They
need to be told that, okay, you're not ready yet for this type of treatment, but they're selling it as it's a better treatment, a more effective treatment, a lifelong treatment. And that's a lie. That's just a lie. So I say I can use it for saying, okay, this person's not ready for recovery.
Will it delay them getting ready?
I don't think so. Because the receptors are wide open. They're still acting out in the same behaviors.
Okay.
None of them get their life together on it. So it's just a way, it's just another avenue, I think, to exhaust now that they've kind of put up another roadblock for us to exhaust that option.
See, I think it delays.
Okay.
But it's safer. Okay. But it's a lot safer.
That's what I think.
It's a lot safer.
Do you remember the HBO special about addiction in America, the Volkoff, that was way behind, pushing the idea of Suboxone, maybe this is the future.
Yep.
The example they gave was a young man about 20 years old, 22 years old. He had a girlfriend. He worked in a fast food thing as a fry cook, right? That's what they were saying was success through Suboxone, right?
Yep.
You can do that being on heroin.
What you, right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Well, you
I don't
can.
See how that's... Yeah.
What you're getting at is what is recovery.
That was the best example of Suboxone success they could find to put on HBO.
Right. Well,
because there are no success stories on Suboxone.
Well, you'll notice no professionals are on Suboxone.
No doctors,
and
no
that's
lawyers.
What I say. And I get into...
No jet fighter pilots.
I cannot tell you how bad this has become in our field. It has become a nightmare. It's become so bad and such a struggle that I can't even work with doctors anymore.
Yeah.
I can't even work with them because you know what they say? That I'm wrong, that I can't be who I am or stay sober without Suboxone, that there's something seriously different about me and these other people could never achieve what I've achieved. And I'm wrong, and I'm in a cult, and I don't know what I'm talking about.
There you go.
And I don't know anything. And
you're not a doctor.
I'm not a doctor, and these people are telling me this stuff, and let me tell you, it's really difficult to tolerate. I'm like, I'm going to put my hands on you.
That's why I'm not doing it anymore.
So let me.
And I get it. I totally get it.
So what we need is if there are Suboxone, lifelong Suboxone success stories, we need those people to step out of the secrecy and say, I've been on Suboxone for 20 years, and I'm a state senator, and it's working for me, but nobody even wants to do that, Drew, let alone that doctors, lawyers, airline pilots, police officers, fire are not allowed to be on it and perform their duties as a job. We have nobody in society saying, hey, I'll be the poster child for Suboxone success. How come that is if it's the greatest drug in addiction history?
I don't know.
Where are the studies?
Oh, there's lots of studies.
Okay.
There's lots of studies. But it's outcomes and what are the
outcomes? Yeah, what are the outcomes?
And it's the big, there's flawed.
How many times you use in a calendar year is one that I saw.
Well, there's flawed in addiction studies generally. It's, you know, they don't have endpoints of sobriety. It's always reduced.
Right.
They often rely on the patient reporting.
Oh.
They typically lose track of 3/4 of the patients.
Not surprising.
And their time horizons are very short.
Right. Their success rate is 1 year.
4 months, full 6 months. Yeah.
Full remission, 1 year.
And so it brings in the really serious question is, what is recovery?
Mm-hmm.
And what are we aiming for? What do we want for our patients? And I think the three of us have always wanted to at least be able to offer the possibility of a flourishing life.
A completely flourishing life. You want to do the work, you can become.
Yeah.
That's what we want to tell people because I think it's true.
I mean, look at Jason Waller, look at Shelley. I mean, it's
this guy,
it's
Don, possible. I saw at the store last night.
Now, it's hard and now it's not for everybody, but the fact that we are going to throw that away.
I think it sells people very, very short and it tells them the wrong message about themselves.
I agree.
I think it's under-supportive.
Yeah.
And I think selling them out to, oh, you have to just take this and that's as good
and
as it's going to get for you.
What's wrong with trying to taper them off? You know, really working and taper them off. They're so fearful of the patients being uncomfortable.
I know. I hear this all the time. We don't want them to suffer.
Oh, that's our society, though.
We don't want them to suffer.
We got into this mess to begin with. So your back hurts. I don't give a fuck. So does mine.
Yeah, I know.
Mine does,
you know what
too.
I mean? But somehow we got to take drugs now.
Ow.
But that's all of America now. It's all of America. So here's what I think is happening. The true real
as
recovery,
Bob
sees
what it.
You call real recovery, is happening and actuating in a more cult-like way than I would like. around Jason, around me, around Shelley.
Oh.
It's weird. Mm-hmm. And that power or that influence you have in other people's lives, you have to respect it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's frightening because it can go to that guy, Chris, who had that recovery program here that the LA Weekly did the article about.
And what people happened?
Well, I start taking advantage financially, sexually. Mm-hmm. That, but if you're going to create these cults of personality based on real recovery, which is based on inspiration, it's very much like a religion almost. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, I do. I understand it.
So the responsibility of the elders, I call them. Donald, to me, it was Gloria Scott, Buddy Arnold, Donald Madden. They taught me well. They taught Earl Hightower well. And we teach, and it just carries on, right?
No, that, it's ultimately about being willing to maintain boundaries. And people don't, people in authority don't maintain boundaries.
Well, it's difficult. Because people don't like boundaries, Drew.
I know.
Do they?
No,
they don't. Takes 3 months for someone to tolerate a boundary that's new.
But I imitate Drew sometimes. I just did it last week. So my house manager moved out of my sober living. I thought, well, I'll oversee it for a while. Those guys are doing good. They're all good guys. They'll do the right thing. And there was nobody living there for 2 days.
Okay.
They had girls spending the night, crazy shit going on. The outpatient calls me.
Oh, my goodness.
I go marching in there like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? And they're looking at me like this is the first time they ever saw me mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, I kind of overdid it like That's you right. do sometimes.
That's right. It's a perfect. It's a therapeutic intervention.
They've been so scared for like a week.
I love this therapeutic intervention. Where can I get them?
You know, you got to raise that voice Shelley, like our dad.
Shelley does it with, you're going to die, you're going to die.
Yes.
All right, we got to take a quick break. Be right back.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I'd like to introduce you all to our latest sponsor. It is the Rocky Mountain Treatment Center. They're in Montana. And if you've been listening to anything that Bob and I have been talking about over the years, you know that we're very particular about an addiction treatment. We don't take recommendations lightly, so we've looked into these guys pretty carefully. And the Rocky Mountain Treatment Center happens to be one I am able to recommend, and I'm happy to do so. They focus on individualized treatment of the patients, including their entire well-being based on a biopsychosocial model. This is what Bob and I have done for years and years. They don't just look at addiction. They look at the psychiatric issues, the psychological issues, the trauma issues, all aspects of the physical and mental health. And of course, you've heard me stress the importance of this for long-term success. There's staying sober, but there's what I call real recovery, which is dealing with all the risk factors that set people up for bad addiction. They're in Great Falls, Montana. It's a 26-bed facility surrounded by amazing Montana landscape. Patients can have a range of recreational therapies, including equine therapy. For more information on Rocky Mountain Treatment Center, click on their banner on the thislifepodcast.com website or at drdrew.com or visit their site at rocky.rehab. That is simply rocky.rehab.
And we're back, Drew.
Hey, man, what's happening?
Okay, so this is the deal. We're going to do Celebrity Rehab. That's why we got Shelley here. We're going to do it again, Shelley.
No way.
We're going to do it in Laguna Beach.
We're going to
do it in Laguna Beach.
Laguna. Too far.
Laguna. Okay. Too far. We'll get you a town car to pick you up in the morning.
That'll work. All right.
Okay. But we're going to do it because America needs it.
They do? What do they need do. This time? What do because they need?
Because we've got to get out here and talk about what we just talked about. Now more so than ever. Now more than
we
7 years
shout
ago.
From the rooftops.
We're gonna say that real recovery is possible.
Yeah, because we're still doing it, Bob.
And the
we're
problem
the least
of,
likely to succeed.
I figured out the economic problem, which is we associate with a treatment center. Mm-hmm. That gives the aftercare that you and I oversee so we don't have to do it all 24 hours a day.
Okay.
There
well,
you
I
go.
Was like
done
like,
deal. Like Jason like Waller. Jason
oh,
I still think
yes.
we'd have to do the the initial thing here, though.
Why is right. that? Because it's close to your house.
It's the only way. It's the only way I could schedule it. But right. also, they know
how to do it.
How to do the production part.
Yeah, they know how to
it's
do
all
it.
Set up.
You've got it. All right, use your brain to figure out how to get PR for the place that really does all the treatment.
Which is Jason's place?
Yes.
You mean the Laguna Beach thing?
Yes.
Well, we'll go down there and show them and talk about it and have a whole segment.
Maybe it's half and half. Maybe it's six episodes.
So you could
of
do
PRC
a sober
and
house.
Five or six.
Yeah,
there.
You can do the continual.
Let's do the whole journey over 12 episodes.
Yeah,
12 episodes.
What we could do though is mm-hmm. sort of maybe take like a 2 month break and then go back in and do a sober house, you know, see how they're
later,
doing.
Later,
kind of
yeah. Maybe give them a little more treatment before they're ready
so,
to do that.
Susan, was my wife, was interested in how you experienced celebrity rehab. What was it like for you?
Well, first of all, very steep learning curve. Very steep. First of all, I am not a camera person. I don't like to be in front of the camera. So that whole aspect took me about 72 hours to even come into my body and be present, because I really did not know how to do that at all. And
but there was nothing to do except just
learn to tolerate it. Yeah. But it was very hard for me to tolerate that. I really am very not in front of the camera kind of person.
Yeah.
So that was difficult. And then the learning curve about the patients coming in, their motivation, how it was skewed, how then we became, you know, these sort of people where they started to split us, right? And Drew was the popular one, so it was easy to split me out all the time.
Shelly's the bad one.
And so I was the bad one. Now, that's okay. I'm not trying to win popularity contests, but when, you know, over time, everybody splits you as the, you know, the demon, and then he's like the savior, then, you know,
it's like at home.
That's just what it's like at home. Okay, Susan, so we have a lot to talk about.
But one of the things I noticed that got off the bat wrong is Shelly really isn't that person.
I know.
But she was that person, and she became that person because that's what we needed.
But, well, to be
we needed Barry is what we needed, and we got Shelly to be Barry.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a little cuter.
Yes, quite a
bit.
Tiny bit cuter than Barry.
But
not as good at taking
the
fire, right? Yeah. He had, you know,
had
so
no
much
problem.
Better of a style. But I'm much better now. I'm much better now.
Are you?
Oh, yes.
But do you remember there's stuff that people didn't see? You ever walking down the street with me?
Yes, because I was coming unglued. You know, I am recovering,
Susan.
You know.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
I am recovering. Like, I'm not, just FYI, like, I'm not wrapped as tightly as Dr. Drew. Okay? Let's just face that right now. All right? I'm just not. So what he could handle is some, like, you know, I'm like tip of the iceberg to compare to what you've seen and what you can handle. I was very affected because I didn't have my chops. You know, I wasn't prepped for that
heavy artillery that they were coming
at me, right?
Yeah, and they were sick. They were super duper sick.
Oh my gosh. They were so sick and so manipulative and so access to you.
But
you can look that up if you want. And it was so difficult because I didn't have those chops.
Let's
you know,
go back, though. My concern initially, that before we even did the first season, was they're not going to talk on television. They're not going to be assholes. They're not going to do what we know addicts do in treatment because of the cameras. And from the get-go, that was not
done.
True. They're fucking going to be drug addicts or drug addicts or drug addicts. Doesn't matter whether there's cameras or not.
Yeah.
And that just surprised me. It really did.
That didn't surprise me.
It didn't?
No.
Well, I think everybody gets used to it. I mean, I got used to the camera.
Yeah,
look at me.
Right. You know, right. She hated it, didn't
saying.
Like it. And so anybody gets used to it. But my thing was, I kept telling everybody, just don't worry about it.
It's going to be fine.
Stuff happens. Don't you have to do anything. Yes. Just let us do our job.
Oh, my clinical floor is as bizarre and crazy as that on a daily basis.
Yeah.
The female side, hello.
Is that primarily what you do, the female side?
I do both sides, but I mean, our clinical floor is crazy. It's all the same. It's all exactly the same as what you saw
on TV,
on television.
But not famous people with no cameras.
Right. No cameras, exactly the same. People are sneaking into each other's rooms. People are trying to get their cell phones. People are trying to keep their cell phone. I had a kid give me a fake, like cardboard thing with a battery pack in it to trick me into thinking he gave me his phone. Like, I'm talking like they're really serious about this.
God, it's
so
wearing to do this constantly.
Now I just laugh. Policing, and it's like, I'm like, nice work. Nice work. Yeah. You almost got away with it, kid. Better luck next time. All right, we're moving on.
Imagine how police actually feel.
Well,
I think that's how we feel a little bit. We get to see the worst and the most animosity.
Yeah, on that front lines. But it's the same. The outcomes, Drew, the outcomes for celebrity rehab are exactly the same as in real life.
Oh, of course.
The
some
drama,
people die. Some people get better.
Was exactly
some people
the same.
Yeah.
Same stuff.
Yeah.
Same motivations. Same difficulty with families. Same difficulty with getting them to do what they needed to do. Same difficulty.
And so let's get to a point that I get criticized a lot from the 12-step world is, treatment really has no effect on drug addicts. Oh. Motivation is what creates willingness, which if you just go to AA, you'll be fine. You don't need to go to rehab. What do you say to that, Dr. Drew?
While everyone knows I'm a fan of 12-step, and it's the data is clear, it has a tremendous impact on the outcomes for addicts.
Amen.
It's often not the whole. You got to get them. You got to make them. My feeling is you have to get them in position where 12-step is possible, where they you
agreed.
Know, you know that it's a, if you're just going to let anybody just trickle in when they're ready, you're going to lose a lot of people that you could have gotten in.
Yeah.
Motivational interviewing, CBT, just connecting to Shelly, looking at her dopamine necklace.
but we don't ideally do things right. And let's look at it from a different perspective. So once we know a client for 2 or 3 weeks is just needs to go to 12-step and just be sober, we rarely discharge them to 12-step. Those that are resistant.
We always just. He means just 12-step.
No, if they're paid, they're going to stay until they're done paying. Let me just be honest. Then there's the people we know are going to benefit. None should be out using and suffering because this is not, they're just ruining this for everyone else.
Okay.
They're never discharged because they're paying.
Because you can't. Professionally, you can't. No, it's because they're paying.
You can't
take that liability. Mm-mm. You can't say, you can tell the person, I don't think you're done, but we'll continue to struggle with you. But you can't say, get out of here because it's my opinion. You're dangerously sick. I ain't going to treat you. That's against the law.
Totally against the law. I have to come up with. I have
you can kick anybody out of rehab
AMA.
In 2 seconds.
You can
refer
them to other rehabs.
You have to refer them out, Drew.
The Salvation Army.
No, because you can't get an appointment.
And it's got to be the appropriate level of care. Yeah, they have to be prepared.
They have to have medications for it to send someone to Salvation Army. Just, you know, that program. They have to have 3 months of medication ahead of time.
Yeah.
They won't even take them. If they have anything in their
system,
they won't take them.
But the point is, it has to be appropriate referrals.
All right. So they're referred to a place they can't afford. It's true.
But if you sabotage them.
It's patient dumping. It happens all the time.
I get the dumping patients on me, and I figure it out. I have to figure it out. I have to figure out what we're going to do with these guys.
Yeah.
Because
That's
it doesn't matter to me. If they're motivated or they're not motivated, they're still a patient.
Right. You have a job to do.
And they have to be treated.
Right.
No. Well, I'm just saying there's the people who really should be in treatment are the contemplative people.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are resistant and don't want anything to do with it. And after a few weeks, you realize there's nothing they're benefiting from this. And they're harming other people with their opposition to change or compliance.
Right.
They're never kicked out anymore.
Truthfully, why aren't they stepped up to a higher level of care? Go to Impact, something like that.
Because
they're not motivated. They have criteria of motivation at CryHelp and Impact.
Yeah, they do have real serious criteria. We get all the people who are, you know, unmotivated and, you know, pre-contemplative and resistant, and we get those guys. But I don't think that it's all for nothing, Bob.
People are the people who interest me because that's where you can do your work and you can try to help them along the way.
The resistant
over 3
ones interest me because that's the big challenge is breaking down that resistance and finding some motivation.
It does ruin it for all the rest of the people. And then you lose some of the other people. They'll discharge because they don't want to be around it.
Well, if they, if you can't maintain, if you
you just need more structure.
If you develop a toxic environment, that's, again, people like me have to solve that problem.
Right.
Well, we do with celebrity rehab. How many people on celebrity rehab would have been kicked out?
Several.
Lots
right?
of them.
Oh, look at this kid. There he is.
It's Rudy.
What's
happening, Holmes?
Hello.
Grab a mic.
How are you?
She's so happy.
I'm so happy.
Shelly loves Rudy.
Come on, eh?
Hey, what's up, Hina? I like your hair that color.
Hey. Doesn't it look good?
Reminds me of my mom's. She used to dye it all, but she had red streaks, you know, to keep it looking.
I'm going to work on that for the next time.
And hers was like a little crunchier, a little, you know, crispier.
A little crispier. More Aquanet. Yeah.
Crispier. Yeah.
We're not wearing that kind of
You've never seen these two together, Bob.
I have. We've seen
Rudy
together,
and Shelly.
Yeah.
Okay. Was it Rudy or was it?
Yeah, Rudy. Okay. I love lines or something.
Okay, right.
I know. Well, I live in Cypress Park, eh?
Orale. It's like, keep it real.
That's
I
right.
like that. I bet, like, one of these days when I get off work, I could come visit, you know, maybe bring some, like, some poppers.
You might cause her to relapse. Really.
Mango
careful,
juice. I heard that's not like a. It doesn't trigger the same shit up in your dome.
All it does is kill brain cells. It doesn't really stimulate.
It just
dopamine.
Explodes them.
But we were talking about
it kills brain cells and buttholes, dog. That's what it does. That's what it does, fool.
Yeah, baby.
That's right.
So
we're far afield. So, Rudy, are you contemplating sobriety? That's what we heard.
Like, I've already cut out like all the real drugs, but like you know, I still smoke the Yeska, dog. You know, because I got to keep my head right.
No Sherman, that though.
No, I don't dip. I don't dip my cigarettes no more, dog. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't smoke the wet. I don't like no more.
Why? No more. Why do you not smoke it?
Because like, now I'm trying to keep my life, you know, in line. Now that I feel like I got a second chance.
He's got a job and he's getting working.
You know, since I got out of the pen, I was telling Drew like the last day before I got out, the Virgin Mary came to my pen, my cell, shit. Dog, and she talked to me. She's like, Rudy, you gotta like make good on, you know, on all the stuff that you've done wrong, and like you gotta like make amends with your family because you abandoned them. And you're being just like your father who abandoned you. And I was like, damn. I was like, this bitch.
That's real.
She like only comes out to give me bad news. Like, she's really depressing.
Virgin Mary understands Virgin intergenerational Mary. Transmission of trauma. Repetition compulsion.
Wow, how does she know this?
Well, because
she's all knowing.
She's Jesus' mother, isn't
oh,
she?
Oh, that's right. She should know things.
Yeah. And so like she understands trauma because she had to explain to her son right. that like he has no father.
Oh yeah,
like you know, just like me, because her father, her son's father was God, and he didn't like he
didn't come down, like,
he didn't stick around,
he wasn't there.
And then she had to say like she had to say like, hey, you're Jewish, and eventually there's gonna be a bunch of vatos come and beat you up and hang you,
right?
And that's gonna suck.
That's gonna really suck.
Like, I can't imagine saying that to my kids, like, hey, eventually people for no reason are gonna like put hammer your hands to a cross.
Ooh,
that would suck.
Nasty. Yeah.
Demon Christmas, such trauma.
Dark.
I was cutting limes for Coronas like at a Raider game in '86, mm-hmm. and I cut my finger right here, mm-hmm. and that was bad. I can't imagine like a big nail.
Ow, right? Like, a nail hand, right through the middle of your hand,
holding your body weight up by a cross.
Oh my God!
It's good motivation for a diet, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd be like, I better lay off the chilaquiles if I'm gonna be hanging by my hand.
So we were talking about motivation. I want to get back to motivation a little bit because that to me fascinates me. You know how you get people because we were talking about patients we did or didn't like talking.
Doesn't
treating.
Kicking unmotivated clients out motivate them to maybe be willing?
Yes,
that's
there are
the
people,
point.
There are people that.
So
have
how many people on Celebrity Rehab should we have kicked out? Jason Davis for sure.
Yeah, that was the one
but
thing.
But he had that arm thing. He had the, like, he was, the
look
he
at
had
you
the
two codependents.
No,
look
burns.
At you. Shelly no, spray well, we codependent.
No. We needed to send him to a different facility.
Yeah. His diabetes and stuff was
that
a mess.
Was gnarly.
Okay,
he had a lot of physical problems.
Yeah. Who else?
See how good I've learned,
but
Drew? I've been on the front lines.
Kicking
I know
out
this.
Unmotivated.
Oh,
patients.
My catheter just
hey,
came
what's
in.
Happening? Yeah.
Oh, hey, there you are, buddy.
Rudy handed me the microphone.
Is he out of here, eh?
I think he went to the bathroom to blaze.
Yeah. not my house.
In Dr.
Drew's home. Can you imagine? Yeah. Kicking out unmotivated patients back to an unsupportive environment.
No bueno.
Is probably not going to motivate them.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Doesn't using in the face of adverse consequence create the motivation to change to be sober?
I don't know, because it's so hard. Motivation's a funny thing in recovery because I don't know about you guys, but the adverse consequences
can be death
in my life had bared no like they didn't have any motivation for me.
Didn't get through it. He had multiple near deaths.
You know what I'm like the worst
Look
times
you,
of my
Bob.
Life. The worst
that
times
didn't
of my
help
life.
You at all.
The trip
to
jail.
Somebody telling him what to do. That's when he had it.
Yeah. Rehab, which that's rehab it. Did all the time.
Yeah, the stinkers.
But you needed some CO officers.
So I don't want to project like that's everyone's experience, but really bad consequences never seemed to have any effect on my motivation to get clean. It was some weird kind of unknowable existential moment, you know.
So in the big book, in the big book of AA, of which all of this is based on, it says if you don't like what we're talking about, if you don't believe what we're saying, it doesn't say go try to be sober on your own. It says go drink, considering what we have told you and talked about.
Mm-hmm. So the FOSS B.
Since we've gotten off of the main motivation of the 20th century of alcohol without treating alcoholism, that no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you have what you have. That's my opinion.
What is this trifecta you speak of?
The trifecta is in the biopsychosocial spiritual model of human beings. There has to be three at the same time, three bottoms. Not one, not two, but three. So you have to hit a bottom.
Triple anal, you're saying. Three bottoms.
Three bottoms.
Back to poppers.
Triple anal, three bottoms. Exactly. That breaks through a portion of the denial system. Somehow it has to be three areas of your life, though, because just regular consequences, not a big deal. So, go to jail, you adapt.
So social,
the brain adapts.
Needs to be social, biological, and
something else.
Spiritual.
I bet professional too emotional. Plays a big role. Yeah. If that doesn't count as social,
it does.
I've noticed that people sometimes get their denial dropped a little bit when they develop a new kind of connection with another person.
Really.
Like a intimacy, not necessarily not a romantic intimacy. Just right. Often people say, "I was hanging out," because I examined people that had a sudden turnaround. What?
Think about that, Louisa.
Yeah.
Giving birth.
Yeah.
Mothers stop using without 12 steps, or when they know they become pregnant. I know you disagree.
No,
but
I know
they do
sometimes.
Percentage of women that do stop and stay stopped in that first year of the birth of the child is that needs to be looked at.
Maybe that's just
Brain chemistry.
Well, it could be just brain chemistry, but I've wondered that. But it could be a new kind of connection again.
Yes, that's why I pointed to you.
New brain chemistry.
There's no really. Yes.
Boys don't have that, Rudy. Yes.
Oh, that's right.
They don't get pregnant?
I remember
out of our bodies.
You guys don't know what happened to his wife. His wife will tell. Explain what happened to
like,
the best.
When I got out of the pen, dog, like, you know, she was. There was a lot more woman there than I remember.
Oh, my God.
And, like, she was having trouble. She was trying to, she did the Atkins and, really? Like, the Weight Watchers, you know, and, like.
Roomba.
And she did it all. And, like, she was not losing weight. She was getting bigger. So I was, like, secretly putting meth in her food.
Did that work?
And, yeah, she lost, like, 109 pounds.
Yeah, her horchata.
Yeah, and her horchata. She was like, oh, this horchata's so good. I'm going to go clean the house. And, like, it was working. It was working crazy good. But then.
The house was clean.
She chopped off her leg. She chopped off her leg because she thought there were bugs in it.
Oh, right.
So, I mean, that's one downside. But, like, she's got crutches.
Well, you know. You figure it out.
It's like, I look at it this way. If I put it on, like, the scale of, like.
It's way better now.
It's like a thin wife with no leg or, like, a fat wife with both legs. I'll take the thin wife with no leg any day.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a lot lighter.
Maybe cut off another, you know.
Yeah.
You had no homosexual things going to prison, did you?
Well, I had a lot.
So his
I had a couple relationships, dog.
No.
Did you really?
Oh, you had one cellmate.
My big cellmate Trucha. He,
is like, that just gay in jail type thing?
It's like I'll put it this way, Bob Forrest. It's like some of us are different. You know what I'm saying? And like, when it comes to like sex, dog, like I'm open minded.
Oh my God!
That's well, really but he was raped in prison.
Well,
right. The first
that's
time, was
right.
Rape.
But like I look at it like how, like Stockholm butthole, you know, like Stockholm syndrome, but for my butt, because like
at first
it was like trauma, but
you
then like
adapt.
I learned to sympathize with,
with
my
with
butt
trout.
Trauma
with trout,
uh-huh.
Trucha.
Trucha made like he became my friend, like all connected,
oh
and
God.
Then like I used to I get like butterflies in my tummy. When he would smash my face into the bed bed and then do bad things.
Trauma
to my
wiring.
Yeah, give me the inside out culo.
Rewiring, baby.
Rewiring the brain.
He had some anatomical problems as a result.
So,
too.
Mike, so
wait,
you,
hold on.
Did Mike hold just on. Go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
And, did you leave a line in there for him?
He stood up. He's walking. He's like, you know,
okay.
My wife and I, I'm back, by the way, guys.
Okay.
My wife and I, who's here today, she,
There you go.
We were talking about how messy our house was because of the baby. Like, you just, things get out of place.
You're going to put Bianca on meth. That's what you're
doing. No. If anything, I'd put Bianca on Quaaludes or something. The last thing she needs is a stimulant. We were talking about how, like, messy things had gotten, and like, it really was bugging us.
Was it bugging her, or was it bugging you? Because it seems like you're a real anal guy.
It was bugging her outwardly. It was bugging me, too. It was bugging me, too. But
dude, you like things perfect, don't you?
In some ways, yes, but in other ways, no.
Like, cars and clothes.
Yes. Yeah, no, exactly. And totally. Mm. I don't like when my plans, when someone throws a wrench in the plans. And
rigid.
I've kind of gotten, I had to get used to her doing that. Like, I just set aside 40 extra minutes to be late.
Okay, yeah.
But we were talking about how gross things were and how much it was bugging us. And it was just because, like, the bed was unmade or there was clothes on the floor. And I thought back to when I was using and how much, infinitely more gross I was. Like, I was a gross person. Like, I used to do blow in public toilets on the toilet.
It builds your immune system.
You know what I'm like? Sober Mike would never. I used to pee the bed so much that I just, instead of thinking, you know what, I have a problem,
mattress
I better
pad.
Lay back, I went and got old people sheets, rubber ones.
What else would
so
you
So it was just like Febreze and flip.
That's right.
Well, that's what we were talking about, is how do you motivate people to see through all that and be willing to do something?
I don't know if you can. I think it's three things that have to crumble.
So maybe something serendipitous in the brain chemistry is what you're saying.
Yes.
Something social consequence, a loss.
See, I think the social consequence has to happen, but it has to involve other people. Because we as addicts are incredibly selfish, but yet don't care about ourselves in any way.
Right.
Which is the weirdest combo. Mm-hmm. So if you go to jail, you get
your
leg amputated because of a car wreck.
Who cares?
If you happen to accidentally in a DUI drive over someone, you're gonna get clean. If you I think those social
the one client I had that did that did not get clean over that.
That's
well, then
maybe,
crazy.
Well, he did for a while.
He did for a while. Oh, so well, we had the same client. Yeah. Oh,
maybe he or she. Didn't.
I used to work with Dr. Drew and Shelly.
Is that true?
Yeah, we were a team.
We'd have never known.
We were a team.
We all three know the guy I'm talking about.
Hey,
and
I
was like, dude, you killed somebody. You can't be drinking like this.
But he was because a weird case.
That's what you believe, and you've seen, and you've heard in 12-step meetings that once you kill somebody, then you won't go back.
Okay, I mean, that may be an extreme
but
circumstance.
See, I think he got so depressed.
Yeah, it was depression.
It can flip on you. Yeah. The consequences could be so bad that you're just a lifer now.
Yeah,
that's right. You don't care.
Like, yeah, you have no. You're totally apathetic.
This is why it's so hard to get and stay sober. And we're just talking about how do people get sober. I think more people need to be kicked out of rehab and not indulged in all this.
Transferred
right? And money can't be the motivation. The reason why they're not getting kicked out is because that's a head on a bed, and a lot of times that's usually the highest paying person in the rehab. Cash pay.
But your county facilities aren't like that. They're not run like that.
There
are
no more
list.
County facilities anymore. There aren't.
Rena B's still there downtown.
What's that, Rena B's?
Yeah, Rena B.
It sounds like one of those weird diseases Drew tells me about on Loveline every third night.
No, they're getting rid of all, trust me, they're going to get rid of MusiCares. I was at a meeting about it.
Well, they might.
Obamacare is supposed to take care of everything. There will not need to be any CryHelps and Impacts unless they're going to go to a for-profit insurance-driven model. Ugh. There's no reasons for, I'm telling you, there's no reason eventually for MusiCares drug program because all people will have health insurance and go to Hazelden and everybody will live happily ever after. That's your Bernie Sanders bullshit.
I know. Yeah. Then they'll get squeezed down where nobody gets, you know, remember how great it is to have insurance? Terrible.
Terrible.
Right? So everyone
will
have the same terrible
insurance.
Right now
it's not as bad as it was 10 years ago when you were dealing with it. It's pretty good now. You can get rich taking insurance these days, but they're going to have all the power and they're going to turn that faucet off.
Of course.
For sure they are.
Especially with treating what we have.
Right.
You know, because there's no real mercy for us.
That's right. No one to advocate for
us. You know, everybody says, well, you did it to yourself ultimately. So I think that, and I say, no, I didn't.
I think the unmotivated and the
my
oppositionally defiant should be kicked
it.
Out. Kicked out.
Yeah. See this
and
necklace?
My brain.
And
my
the
problem.
Really willing, the clients Shelly likes so much, of which she has 1 out of 15 probably right now, that are just want it so bad and they'll do anything Shelly says. They don't need to be there either.
Into doing
they don't need to be there. Yeah. It's the people in contemplation that need to be, and all of treatment needs to be focused on breaking down denial, cognitive behavioral therapy on the contemplative people.
Yeah.
You can't mix all three populations together. Mm. It's madness. Mm. And we had that madness on Celebrity Rehab. And that was one of the entertaining things about it, but it's also one of the destructive things.
It's like campaigning, honestly. Like the way you're looking at it. And it makes a lot of sense because you don't really want to focus on the people who are going to vote for you no matter what. And you certainly don't want to concentrate on the people that are not going to vote for you under any circumstances.
Exactly.
It's those people that are on the fence that you really got to appeal to. You know?
Yeah.
But again, the resistant ones interest me.
You like them.
I think I've broken through resistances. Like it's yeah,
I wore down your where... I wore down your interest in my resistance, and you didn't want to right. deal with me.
No, that's
anymore.
Right. Well, I wasn't
yeah,
as good then.
He's like a weird alien.
Yeah, no, he was bad. Really is. Oh, he was bad in his day.
Yeah, but, you guys should have unloaded with them. Hello.
Anytime Anthony Kiedis says that guy's too dark for me, yeah. like I can't party with him.
Yeah. No,
he's too intense.
Yeah,
too
that's
intense.
Bob Forrest. Just think, Bob.
You should have seen the crack. You should have seen us
did
on
you,
the crack.
Did you guys use together?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the time.
All the time.
She yeah. stitched up my back when I got stabbed because I had a worn out for my arrest and didn't want to go to the hospital.
Duct tape. Duct tape. I swear to you, I made butterflies with duct tape.
You never.
She made a butterfly bandage with duct tape.
Yes.
You cut out the little.
That's what I did. That's what I did.
I got stabbed, and I thought, who knows how to fix this without going to a hospital? Shelly
can figure it out. House.
Yeah. It's amazing how resourceful you become as a drug addict.
But like that's the craziness of drug addiction. Like you're going to walk into an emergency room and they're going to call the police. Oh, you have a warrant out for drug possession.
Yeah. No, they're
it's
just
the
going to stitch up
that
your
you
back.
Live in.
But I didn't even know that at the time. That's how effed up
but
I
you,
was.
But you didn't trust
right.
anything that was part of the
oh,
social
no.
fabric.
Don't go into... No. Yeah. No popo. No 5-0s. No... Fire
no,
department.
Nothing.
Don't
nothing
call.
With an office.
No.
Anything that involves
nothing.
An office.
Nothing official.
Yeah.
So nothing with official. An emblem.
But I don't think people, Shelly, know your history. Tell them
oh,
quickly.
Oh, they don't know that I got loaded with Bob Forrest.
No, no. But you're quickly. You're.
My polysubstance addiction. Yeah. Starting at like. Hyperventilating was my first drug. Hyperventilation. I learned how to do that when I was about sixth grade, and perfect. Then I started to do that, and then I fell and I had a consequence. Hurt my nose. Fell forward instead of backwards on the bed. Oops. Right into the dresser. Just
oh, bam.
Then my mom's like, what are you doing? Nothing. You know, it already started right then. That's exactly. That's the whole
Mike's
thing.
Mike's wishing he would have thought of that. Look at him.
Oh, no, we used to do that. We used to do that one where, you know, your
grab
behind,
from behind.
And you breathe, and then you blow it out as hard as you can, and then your friend would grab you from the like the sternum, and we'd pass out.
This
like,
crazy,
oh, so
this crazy footage of Steve-O yes. being thrown to the ground after one of those episodes when he was
oh
using.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Ironically, the I used to pass out like using certain drugs. Like GHB was a one where I would constantly drink it to the point that I would just fall over. Like I got shot. Like not, you know, the thing about like heroin or like the opiate based pills is that there's like a gradual decline to passing out. I used to drink GHB and I would use other substances. So my brain would be like alert. I'd be like, you know, smoking rock. And be on key, but I was drinking this drug that would eventually shut my brain off, and I would be like talking to you and just go boom, you know. And I never really hurt myself. The only time I ever hurt myself, like falling over, I was taking a shit at my parents' house. I was like 14 and sober, mm-hmm. and I was taking a shit for so long that my feet fell asleep, my legs fell asleep, and I'd done like big squat workout the next day, the day before,
oh,
and I
no.
went
you
to
just
get
went
up,
down.
Yeah, and
it's
my body like,
just went down.
I had little like linguine legs, and they just I smashed my head on the bathtub.
What's your
ouch.
Exposure rate? What age?
Alcohol probably. What's seventh grade? Like 13, 12, 13?
12, 13. What's your show?
But I run
12.
I wasn't a kid who immediately when I got an inebriating substance in me, I was like, this is it.
So Drew,
it wasn't until about 16 where I was like, I need to continually be inebriated.
Drew.
I was a blackout alcoholic by the time I was 17. I had to quit drinking.
When did the opiates start?
20. I went through phases where I went out.
She always had a job, if that matters. She always had a job.
You stay another hour.
I it was so great. I am so classic, right? The trauma and then the early use and then more trauma. And then it went alcohol, weed, speed, crack, and then it went to opiates.
And how'd you support the habit?
Well, I did this funny thing. I stole from my parents, but they didn't know that I was stealing from them. They thought
Bernie Madoff?
That's a difference. That's a difference in kids mm-hmm. these days.
Yeah.
They don't care if they get caught. They steal the whole wad of money.
Yeah.
Mm. I would always, and Shelly would always, you just take what they won't notice.
Yeah. Don't. Yeah. Don't alert them.
Shelly and Bob are like the old grizzled bank robbers in the movies. You see, like the Humphrey Bogart would come in and tell like Jimmy Cagney, he's like, "You're getting greedy, kid. You gotta do it slowly."
Yeah,
or when De Niro comes up to the guy in Goodfellas, he's like, yeah. "I told you not to be flashy with the money. You buy a pink Cadillac."
I told you. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. That, so those, my family, those statements know. Are true.
Well, and also, I bet you're right, but because they're kicked in like to hyperdrive with that motivation because of the pills and stuff. Like mm-hmm. back in, I'm certainly an old timer because my first exposure to drugs and alcohol was alcohol and then weed. Like mm-hmm, right. 99% of humanity until the last like 10 years where now kids are popping Norcos before they even think to blaze 12, a joint.
Well, they're 11, getting them from the emergency room when they break their arm. That's what they're getting
and 12.
Them.
Elvis was already on it, had his adenoids out, and he was high, and he mm-hmm. was having fun and talking dreamy talk, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh my God.
Ivy was on fentanyl at birth.
Mm-hmm. But let's the two parts of your history I want to quickly get out there. One is the Xanax withdrawal thing.
Oh yeah, so the post acute withdrawal that lasts like you're a cuckoo bird for like 2 years.
They thought she was psychiatrically. They put her in locked units.
It looks like benzo withdrawal looks like someone's cuckoo. Lost their mind.
I lost my mind. Yeah,
like
that
eat,
was
your,
true.
Eat your poo. Lost your mind. Yeah. Like you belong in a padded room.
Seriously, yeah. I was in Sears.
Eat your poo. Wait a minute. Eat your poo.
Just hyperbole. A little poetic. Well, license.
I don't mean
he's
that
talking
she,
literal.
I don't mean that she was literally eating the poo poo.
Yeah, I didn't do that.
No,
but it's crazy. Shit eating crazy.
Shit eating crazy.
I mean, I literally
or German.
I had so much. I had so many psychiatric symptoms that I was diagnosed I took Haldol, for God's sake. You know, I mean, Haldol's like a heavy duty. Yeah, it was terrible, terrible. I was at Cedars. They were like, you're this, you're that. I just escaped from there.
Did anybody make the right diagnosis? Just in retrospect, you see that?
Just major depression. Disorder. Yeah. That's it.
Depression and drug mm-hmm. addiction. That's what
I'm
convinced.
No one ever gave you any kind of barbiturate or Neurontin or anything that help
arbitrate.
They gave me lots of things, but the final thing was, I just needed the gabapentin. I mean, that's really all I needed was 900 milligrams of gabapentin. It could have cleared me right up, and I could have been not in the psych ward with a year of sobriety because I went cuckoo, right?
Yeah.
The benzos were brutal.
Do they make those drugs anymore?
Benzos?
No, obviously benzos, but I meant like the old school.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I have a client on lithium. I just don't understand.
Lithium's
why.
Good.
Lithium's fine.
It's cheap.
You got to get blood checked all the time.
Yeah, but if you can't take...
Same with steroids.
Lamictal, it's very good.
It is good. I like Latuda now.
Oh, do you like it?
Yes.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
I do. I like it.
We just went down a rabbit hole.
Sorry.
Do you think that there's different types of trauma that trigger women versus men?
Yes.
I mean, we all know that there's a genetic undertone of addiction that comes with being born. But then also, do you think that I feel like there's different types of trauma that really put men or women on the beeline to being like heavy users, you know?
Yes. I think men have a really hard time tolerating any kind of powerlessness in their youth, where they are systematically taken, their power is taken away from them.
Yeah.
I think that causes so much problems. And I think that when they're
what kind of problems in adult? What kind of problems in adulthood?
Well, obviously the drug addiction.
Codependency.
And then codependency.
Oh, really? How about criminal behavior?
And then and your antisocial personality disorders.
Yeah.
Because the powerlessness, they can't tolerate it. And that's what I see mostly when I'm working with guys, is that somebody depowered them.
Yeah.
At some age.
I'm totally with you.
And they depowered them, to which then they needed to compensate for that. So they have the shadow self back there in the self-destructive with the depowering.
Would helicopter momming, would that create a depowering?
No, that's empowered. That's falsely empowered. Falsely empowered.
It could go either way, right? Like Jason Waller, it was falsely empowered.
Yes.
If it becomes too intrusive, mm-hmm. it's disempowering.
Right. Well, he's a special case because he was, I don't know his family background, but if he was falsely empowered and then being
TV
and almost TV. Impossibly handsome, mm-hmm. so well, girls were probably mm-hmm. walking, you know, walk
lying
over broken glass
feet.
to be with him. So that adds to it. And then he gets put on TV mm-hmm. and, you know,
oh,
gets
no,
that.
These are
you know what's funny? These like I have a lot of different handsome men friends. When you say it to Jason, you go, he just acknowledges it. I think that's healthy that he acknowledges that he's a very attractive man. Yeah. I have other friends who are like, dude, what are you talking about? I'm not like the most handsome man in the world by most people's regulation. You tell him he's handsome, he just goes, oh, dude, come on.
Even if you're
how the, fucking weird is that?
Even if you're insecure,
is he a
about
musician?
It,
no, he's
even
an
if
actor.
You're insecure about it.
Oh, an actor.
You
oh,
got it. Wow. You got to do that because nothing annoys me more than when you're like on a red carpet and like Megan Fox will walk by, like the most perfect looking person, and she's like, oh, you don't even understand. You should see me without makeup. And it's like, shut the fuck up. Like when Clooney's the best about it. They'll be like, you know, you got everything. He goes, oh, thank you very much. Thank That's you. Very nice of you to say. You know, like
that's
just,
a
boom.
Solid ego. That's a healthy ego.
That's a healthy ego state, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ego state. Let's talk about self-esteem for a second. These kids have too much self-esteem.
I agree.
What creates it?
False empowerment. It's not self-esteem.
I think low self-esteem is a healthy thing.
Yes.
It makes you take responsibility for things. Appropriate low self-esteem. Yes. Makes you take responsibility for things, and it makes you want to do better.
Not like me, like zero self-esteem.
Me too.
So, so zero self-esteem, that's a so really good. Big problem.
Well, I think it also
Mike,
plays,
where do you register on the self-esteem?
Low, but inappropriately low.
40 percentile?
I don't know. I wouldn't even have... now, I mean, I'm much higher now than I ever was, but, you know, Shelley was talking about being depowered. Mm-hmm. And as a young guy, you know, Drew and I have talked about my sexual trauma and having an older woman kind of take my virginity. But I've always speculated that when I was like right around the same age, so yeah, it was maybe 6 months later, I got the shit beaten out of me. Like to the point where my survival instinct was kicking. Like I was like, oh my God, these guys are going to kill me. Okay. And it was like numerous guys. They were way bigger. They were older kids. And I got beat to the point like I didn't know how to go home without my parents going, oh, we got to take you to the emergency room. So I had to like run away essentially for like half a day.
Okay.
And I think that has stuck with me more. Oh,
yeah. Well, that and that near drowning thing. Was that the same one?
Yeah.
Because I just felt it. And I went, have you had drowning or something? I had that weird thing I do sometimes.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, yeah, the kids held my head underwater. I was like, oh, geez.
It's that stuff that happens at those certain ages where it just lodges in your brain and you're different. You're just different from that point forward. You are just different.
And we got to wrap this up, but quickly.
Oh, no.
I know.
It went by
fast. Tell the surgery story is the other thing I like people to hear.
Oh, the surgery, yes. I had surgery, and it was an emergency. I had 4 years of sobriety, and I had to go in. I didn't have preparation because we don't talk about Kaiser and, you know, how they do things. But I had to go into emergency surgery. They cut me open. I woke up loaded on opioids, however, not high. Not high because I was in abject terror when they cut your stomach and everything. It's like painful.
You don't have to tell me, Hina.
Oh, where you came back?
I got shanked many times. You know, my guts all over my legs.
Oh, shit.
It hurts really bad for a long time. So they gave me morphine and blah, blah, blah. But I woke up and I was literally like, I need more. Right away, I need Dilaudid. Oh, would you give me morphine? No, I need Demerol. No, I was just like controlling. I was like, I need this. I need that.
Knowledgeable client.
I need this.
Well, but also bullshitting too. Like, when was your last shot? I don't know, 4 hours ago.
Yeah,
it's like,
just completely. I was glued to the clock. Right. I had the thing.
So she was in
fully to the clock.
In her disease.
When is my next shot? Is all I cared about. I didn't want my husband there. This is what's great. I didn't want my husband there at the time. I didn't want my family there. I wanted to pull the curtains. I wanted to watch TV. If I had Captain Crunch, I would have been eating it. For 4 days, I was deep in. And they had to literally come and just extricate me.
And you were aware that you were back in it.
I was aware.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was nasty. It was nasty. And I was mean. You know, just like I left off, Bob. Remember, we would get mean. Mm-hmm. Like at the end, we would be like we called them the heroin meanies because you would just get nasty.
You had to look out for yourself.
It was weird. You just get nasty. And I was just nasty.
Heroin meanies.
That's a terrible Little League team, the heroin meanies.
All right, we got to wrap this up. Shelley, you're welcome back anytime.
Oh, please, let me come back.
Mike, thanks for visiting. We're doing a separate podcast with you.
Ba-da-da-da-da.
And anything you want people to know? Find you anything?
Find me?
You're too busy, so I don't send you more patients.
Well, I'm going to have ShelleySprague.com up and running, okay?
Right.
I've had this.
S-P-R-A-G-U-E.
S-P-R-A-G-U-E. I'm going to have that up and running, and I want to do some blogging on, like, what I talk about. You know, like, my, you know, everything boils down to one
molecule.
Genetic molecule, dopamine.
I have to teach you all about the biology of that molecule.
I'm so excited. See, Drew, I owe my whole, all of this, I owe to you. You got me started in the brain, and I have not let up since. I love the brain. I am so excited about it. Who knew? I was shooting dope with Bob, but I'm actually a good scientist.
See? Yeah,
I didn't know.
Well,
had
you
no
were
idea.
You were experimental scientist at that point.
Yes,
of
exactly.
All the people on the earth.
Okay,
right. This Life Podcast on Twitter. Da 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 da.
Well, thislifepodcast.com also we have, don't we? Or do we not?
Just Twitter.
Yes, we do.
Oh, we do.
Yeah. And follow us on Twitter. Follow us at drdrew.com. Click
Google
through,
us.
Click through on Amazon, please.
My number is 213-804-3843. That's 213-804-3843. Because people need help, Drew. We got to get the message out.
He has two phones.
I have two phones. That's
okay. And we click through the Amazon banner that supports this show so we can keep doing it. It turns out we need a new computer to be able to run this thing. Turns out.
Donations.
Yeah.
Anyone.
Right. I want to remind people that today's episode is courtesy of Rocky Mountain Treatment Center. And please support the people that support the show. We do try to have people worthwhile.
Tell your friends.
Yeah, worthwhile people to advertise in this program.
All
see you
right.
Next time. You're a soul fire.